This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
He's on the ball. He's in his court, you know. Obviously, you know, we've been working together, you know, to see what happens, you know. But obviously, it's a different offseason for Alex, you know. You guys know how I feel about him. Last year, he checked all the boxes that, you know, I knew he was going to check. And he checked all the some boxes that people didn't know that he was going to check. And, you know, I just let him work last year. And obviously I cannot talk about free agents, you know, very straightforward, black and white. But I love the player. We love the player. Let's see what happens.
Welcome in. I am John Lyons. And I have Justin Turpin and Tom Carroll alongside me this morning. Jackson is producing. And holy smokes, guys, do we have a busy morning. When we first booked this show, we were thinking, all right, we're going to do 3.5 hours of Patriots preview. We're here till 12:30, by the way, folks. 617-779-7937 is the phone line and the text line. And as we're getting ready to preview the Patriots for 3.5 hours, and don't worry, we're still going to give you an in-depth preview. Well, the Bruins had two guys have hat tricks yesterday. The Celtics lost a clutch time game to Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs. Great game, by the way, that Terp and Tom were both at last night. And then late last night, as we were watching the Bears come back to beat the Packers, word breaks that Red Sox third baseman, or should I say former Red Sox third baseman, is signing with the Chicago Cubs, another young, up-and-coming playoff team, five-year, $175 million deal. So no Rafael Devers, no Alex Bregman. Not sure what the Red Sox are going to do next. You just heard Alex Cora talking. That was from yesterday at Fenway Fan Fest, whatever you want to call it now, Fenway Fest.
Fan Fest.
Which
They're
is, you know, the guys aren't here fest, right? That's what we call it. So let's start, guys. Is there a level of surprise here that Alex Bregman has gone somewhere else? And if so, what's the level of disappointment?
Not really. When you were kind of teeing it up there, I wanted to say unbelievable, but it's become very believable. So, no, not really at all. I mean, it felt like the more they played the market and the longer this dragged on, the less of a chance he was going to come back. And they ran the risk by playing the market the way they did. So, no, I mean, this has been just become the norm with this team. So I wouldn't say I'm surprised at all.
Now, what they need to do is get Bichette. And then we all kind of forget about this.
I think.
It's just become maddening because we know what this team is capable of. We know the type of money they bring in. We know that there is no salary cap, and yet they are worried about these luxury tax things, whatever CBTs we want to call them now. It just sucks. The whole thing sucks. The guy was so important to that team last year. The first time you had made the playoffs since 2021, and all you did was talk about how important Bregman was as a leader. You heard Cora yesterday talking about it. If he was so important and the market was dictating that he was to be paid X, then why not just pay him X and then move on? And they just couldn't do it. And they lose out to the Cubs, and we'll get some sort of number here over the next couple days, I'm sure, from a local reporter. And we'll all laugh at it the same way we laughed at Alonso for 3 years and 85 mil. It's just a joke, man. It continues to be a joke.
And just for reference, Bregman last year in 114 games had 273, 18 homers, 62 RBIs, had that time in the middle of the season that he missed. In the playoffs in three games, had 3 hits and 3 walks in those 3 games, and was a guy that when they brought him in, obviously the production was something that people were excited about, and not just his time at Houston, but if you looked at his numbers at Fenway Park in his career prior to coming to the Red Sox, they were terrific. But it was also the leadership aspect. You look at this team, and a lot of guys on the Red Sox, even guys we look at as veterans, guys like Jaron Duran, who's been here since 2022. Well, this was his first playoff series this past October, right? So Bregman was a guy that had won multiple World Series. He'd gone deep in the playoffs. And now you have that void there where, look, you can agree or disagree with the Devers trade. I'm okay with them trading Devers. The problem is the return they got was essentially non-existent. I mean, it was Jordan Hicks and Kyle Harrison, like, great, okay? So the return, and they have yet to reallocate the money. And Sam Kennedy said yesterday with Ken and Curtis on the morning show on EEI yesterday that, oh, well, we took on $498 million in salary commitments. Okay, well, some of that is Crochet's long-term deal. Some of that is Anthony's long-term deal. And also some of that was Bregman's $40 million from last year, which is now gone. So it just feels like, Terp, all these factors that we were excited about when they brought Bregman in have been kind of washed away just in the last 12 hours.
And it goes, like you said, it goes that Devers trade, right? It was a salary dump. That's what it was. And the idea was that they were going to reallocate some of the money, as you said, and it was supposed to be Alex Bregman. I think that's what made it somewhat palatable. I think the fan base was kind of torn with that, right? I think you can see both way. You can see both sides of it. Obviously, Devers wasn't a great teammate last year. They went to him. They asked him to move, play first base, go to DH, whatever. He wasn't really happy with it, but he was kind of blindsided by the Bregman signing in the first place. So that was their first mishandling of this, bringing in Bregman, not really running it by Devers, and annoying him in that sense, and then asking him to move to positions. He felt disrespected and wanted out, and then that ended up fizzling out the way it did. But for that to be a salary dump and for you to kind of you start the year last, this is what I just can't get my head around. You start the year last year with both Bregman and Devers, and you go into the year this year with neither of them. That is just, that is inexcusable.
It's malpractice.
Right.
And to do exactly what you said, to trade Devers to get nothing with the thought process of, well, at least we have Bregman, and now you have no Bregman. It's like, what are we doing? Like, are you trying to build on the momentum from last season, or are you trying to stifle it? Was last year just an aberration, and we're going to go back to this, you know, rebuilding Red Sox, and oh, well, you know, they're young and the future is bright. It's like they were right there last year. Like, if they don't lose arms towards the end of the year, if Giolito stays healthy, we're talking about a team that probably is playing in the ALDS because the Yankees weren't really hitting.
And they would have given
much.
Toronto a better series.
Absolutely.
In my opinion. I mean, if Nate Eaton rounds second base in game two, maybe they end up playing in the ALDS.
Yeah.
And look, guys, it kind of leads me to this conclusion, and this isn't new. Like, you guys have talked about, it's not new. You can go all the way back to the firing of Dave Dombrowski, really. During the 2019 season, less than 12 months after he had won a World Series with one of the greatest Red Sox teams ever, and then, you know, you trade Betts and you get nothing back. You let Schwarber walk after getting him at the deadline. And by the way, let's not forget, Schwarber himself even was the discount deadline acquisition. He just worked out well. You let Eovaldi walk. You let Bogaerts walk. Like, the list goes on. What my conclusion comes to is they want to win regular season games. They're not as concerned with winning playoff games. Because I think, as we've seen, you look at the teams that go deep in the playoffs, and you can look at Red Sox teams, but you can also look at other teams in recent years. They have two all-star caliber starting pitchers and multiple high-impact guys in their lineup. Just go to the Dodgers last year and how deep their rotation was, and they needed every single one of those guys in the World Series. Look at Toronto with Gausman. Your Savage emerges. The year before, the Yankees had Rodon and Cole. But you, even the Diamondbacks, who we look at as, oh, in 2023, they won 84 games and they made the World Series. What a story. Well, they still had Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly pitching great for them at the front of that rotation. So my point is, you have enough guys to win a lot of regular season games, but you're still missing that legit number two starter to help you win in the playoffs. And now, look, if they sign Bo Bichette, I'll feel better, but it still feels like you're got a guy in the lineup. Sure, like Wilson Contreras does help make you better. But you look beyond that, you have Marcelo Meyer, who's going to play second or third, but he gets hurt every August. That's been an issue, right? Tom, you've pointed this out before, too. It's been an issue. And then Trevor Story, who I will say gave you a great year last year, but can you depend on that guy to play 140 or 150 games? Like, last year he played 157 games. The last time he had played more than 140 was 2021. Like, can you really depend on that guy? So that's another piece right there. It's just, it feels like this is an organization that they want to win regular season games and get to the playoff games that Tom just talked about. But if they lose in the playoffs or they get there and it's close, feels like that's okay with them.
And they're, like you said, Tom, they're right there. Like, all you had all this momentum from last year, and you just kind of let it go.
Squandered.
You just totally let it go. You're right there. And the thing is, too, it's like their top 10 in most expensive ticket sales and all this revenue and stuff. Like, you have all the assets to go out and do it, and they just don't do it. It's just, it's beyond frustrating.
It's just disheartening. And they're still going to have asses in seats, and people are going to continue to support this team. And that's the thing that goes back to what you're saying, John, is they just want to continue making money. They see this as, we own a tourist trap, and we're going to continue to make money on this thing, so let's just support it enough so we can have this thing with the lights on and people can still come here and buy jerseys and buy Fenway Franks and everyone's happy and sing Sweet Caroline. And like, they'll probably still be in the playoff mix, but does anyone sit here today and think that they are a true World Series contender? No.
And that's the tough part, because if you go back, and Tom, you alluded to this earlier, a couple different things break their way last year. They're in the ALDS. And I think they give Toronto a better series. Let's not forget, they took 2 out of 3 from Toronto at the end of the year last year. And if you look around the AL, the other side of this, two guys, is, okay, the Red Sox, maybe we could talk ourselves into saying they're the same as last year. Like, Sonny Gray and Contreras might give you kind of what Bregman and Giolito gave you. Like, I still say they're a little worse, but maybe you're in the nip. But, well, the Orioles just added Pete Alonso. Plus, like, Adley Rutschman's not going to have a bad year again, I don't think. Like, those young guys are going to get better. Toronto goes to Game 7 of the World Series. They add Okamoto and Dylan Cease, the best available pitcher on the market. And don't forget the Yankees. I know they haven't spent a lot. They're going to get Gerrit Cole back at some point right this season, who's a Cy Young-level pitcher. So everybody in your division, and I'm not really including the Rays here, but your other division rivals have all gotten, I think, significantly better. And I include the Cole return in that. Whereas you, at best, you're the same. You're probably a little worse. So now I sit here and I say, are they going to finish third in the AL East? Are they going to finish fourth? Like, that takes you. Again, Crochet could have another Cy Young year. Roman Anthony could continue to take a step forward. It's just, you look at this division, I don't know. I mean, they're in a spot right now where if they don't make another one or two high-impact additions between now and opening day, we might be looking at third place at best in the AL East.
It's January 11th and they haven't signed a big league free agent. Like,
that's
how does
crazy
that happen?
Yeah.
That's...
And I know they've quote unquote taken on salary with trades. Like, Sam Kennedy talked about that yesterday, and yet that is true. But Sonny Gray, you take on salary, it's a 1 year deal. Like, Contreras is a guy in his 30s. He's not going to be here long term. So it's like, okay, technically you took on salary, but to your point, they're like, there's nothing. Like,
the Rockies spent.
Yeah.
That's a JV team.
Yeah, the fact that you and the Rockies were the only two teams that hadn't signed anyone for the longest time just speaks to exactly where this team is when it comes to team building.
And I like the Wilson Contreras move. Like, they had,
I do too.
Abraham Toro started 77 games for their first base last year. Like, yeah, I like that. And obviously nobody really believes in Tristan Casas at this point. So yeah, I like that move. But it's just the Pete Alonso thing too. He goes in the division, and that's a deal on face value that the Red Sox would make. That seems like that's a deal that they should have made, that they would be comfortable making, yet they pin it on that he's too old, but they go out and sign or trade for Sonny Gray and Wilson Contreras. Like, at least be consistent with the messaging, where these guys are too old, but you're going to go out and trade for these players, and you're going to offer Bregman this money and get outbidded for a guy that you were kind of, you should have been forced into overpaying for because of the Devers trade. And those two will always go hand in hand. No matter how much you want to separate the two, it's never going to be that way. So it's just, the whole offseason has just been a complete disaster for them. And again, I like the Contreras move, and I like the Sonny Gray trade as well, because he's a high strikeout guy. I think he can fit in well in this rotation. But I just, looking at this roster compared to where you were last year, I don't think you can possibly look at it and say you're better. Like, you had Bregman and Devers at the beginning of last year.
It's
and
a good
now
point.
Neither of them are gone.
Yeah.
I just don't think you can look at this roster and say they're better. I think that's crazy.
And I think that you look at what Toronto is doing and you see them lose in Game 7 in one of the most epic World Series games of all time, and they say, you know what? We still need to get better.
Yeah.
And like, the Red Sox should have that mentality. Any team that's elite should have that mentality. Any organization that has the money and the wherewithal to do that should do that. That's the way that all teams should think and operate. So to see a team that's always been little brother in the division doing that and kind of passing you should be a wake-up call, but it's not. It just isn't.
And by the way, we've seen this ownership group do that before, where 0-3 they lose in Game 7 of the ALCS, and they go out and add Curt Schilling and Keith Foulke. Or 0-5, they have a early playoff exit, so they go out and add Josh Beckett. Or even 2017, they come up a little bit short. They're not quite good enough in the playoffs, so they go and add J.D. Martinez. So we've seen this organization do this before. 617-779-7937, that's the phone line and the text line. Got a bunch of texts coming in. And we have 1978 texter. He only played 114 games last year. He'll never fulfill the five-year contract, not worth the money. And I think the piece on this that's interesting to me is, yes, maybe the year five of that deal won't look great, but if you're the Red Sox, you can survive that. You can afford that. You can afford to have 3 or 4 years of a deal work out, and then that last year not really work out. Like, that, you can afford that if you're the Red Sox, especially if you're trying to win World Series. And we see teams do it all the time. And again, you can't do that with everybody. I get it. But I don't. And a 781 text to the Red Sox will not sign Bichette. He wants $300 million. I think that's it's sad that we're sitting here thinking that. But a guy that wants $300 million, Turpin, feels like that's a guy that's out of their price range now, which is kind of annoying to say, but it's not new either.
No, not at all. And they should be willing to get. He's 27 years old. Like, yeah. He's right.
And he's good, that, by
he's
the
good.
Way.
Yeah, he's a good player.
He's good.
Right. Yeah. I think it would save face a little bit, but I think it, like, it's just a frustration with this whole thing.
It's just not going to happen, though.
I don't think, like, it's going
to
happen.
Thing I would be surprised.
Watch, he goes to the Yankees. Just to put the cherry on top.
Scale of 1 to 10, if I were to ask
one.
You say 1.
I'd go a little higher than that. Probably 3.
I would say 3. Yeah, so think about it. We're both under 4.
Yeah.
All three of us are under
a bad thing.
Like, this is the Red Sox.
They're not going to give $300 million to anybody.
I mean, the only time they've done it is Devers, and what did that last for? 2.5 years of the contract?
And they salary dumped them.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Like, and again, yeah. I get it. He wasn't a good teammate. He'd like, you know, and if I'm John Henry and I fly to Kansas City to have a conversation with this guy, and he pretty much tells me to, like, go
too
away,
bad, but,
too
yeah.
bad,
no.
then yeah, I get the frustration. But still, this is your franchise cornerstone, so you thought. Not even hyperbolic to say, a generational hitter. And you trade him for 114 games.
Line up with Ted Williams.
Right. 114 games of Alex Bregman, Jordan Hicks, Kyle Harrison, and was it
Jose
Bayo?
And I think that's the issue, Terp, right? It's like, and I, not to cross sports totally, but like, I always compare the Devers trade to the Luka Doncic trade, where you were right about the player, but you really screwed up what you did. Like, you want to tell me Devers was not a good locker room guy? And I think they paid him, guys, in a reactionary fashion to getting nothing for Betts and losing Bogaerts.
100%.
Sure. So you want to tell me, hey, this guy isn't the fit for our young guys and what we're trying to do. I buy that.
Yeah.
But then to turn around and get nothing for him in return. I mean, the best thing you got for him was probably Tibbs, who you traded for, what, Steven Matz at the deadline?
Yeah.
Like, okay. But, like, you get nothing for him in return, and then you don't reallocate that money, whether it was at the trade deadline last year, whether it's so far in free. And it's like I say, so far in free agency, guys, the baseball season ended 2.5 months ago. It's not like we're 2 weeks into free agency. Like, this is not new. So it's they're in a, I don't want to say they're in a terrible spot right now, because they did just make the play, but they're in a bad spot right now.
And real quick, and this is not to take away from their success last year at all, but just think about, in some ways, how they kind of lucked into some of this. Nobody could have expected what they got out of Carlos Narváez last year.
Even and Anthony when he came up.
Anthony, Trevor Story playing the way he did. In May, if not for his contract, it wouldn't have been crazy to be like, oh, Trevor Story should go to the bench. Like, he should not be playing. He
by
was
like
unplayable.
By like the end of May.
And by the end of May, and he just turned it up and played great. But, like, think about it. Like, Anthony, Narváez, even Rafael in a way, the leap that he took.
You had two gold glove outfielders.
Yeah. And none of this was really, like, projected, right? It was like Roman
Bayo kind of came out of nowhere and had, like, a consistent
Giolito
year.
Giolito was the best pitcher in the AL in the summer.
Just what they got out of everybody last year, not to say it was, like, kind of lucked into it, but it wasn't expected. Like, they weren't expecting that. And
that was with Duran having a downish year.
Yeah. It's just, like, again, it starts with Anthony. Like, just the amount of pressure they put on him last year, like – and everyone knew once he went down with that oblique, they were in some serious trouble. And that speaks to how good he is, but it shouldn't have been in that position in the first place.
So the Red Sox lose Alex Bregman. And you guys, we can make the case that's not even the biggest story of the day, because there is playoff football at Gillette Stadium tonight. So we are going to talk Bregman throughout the show. We'll probably sneak in a Celtics segment as well, because I think that game, not only was it a good game last night at TD Garden, I think it was instructive on how the Celtics might approach the rest of this year. But we are going to get into the Patriots-Chargers playoff game next, 617-779-7937. But before we do any of that, it's time to trend with Tom Carroll.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Playoff football returns to Gillette Stadium tonight at 8 o'clock as the 2-seed Patriots host the 7-seed Chargers on NBC. The Patriots are currently a 3.5-point favorite sitting on the money line at minus 200. Tune in before kickoff to WEEI Football Sunday with Arkan, Shime, and Mego starting at 4:30. We'll be talking about it all morning. Alex Bregman is reportedly signing with the Chicago Cubs. 5 years, $175 million per ESPN's Jeff Passan. NFL scoreboard from Saturday. Rams escaped an upset down in Carolina, beating the Panthers 34-31. Packers blew a 21-3 halftime lead. Bears pull off the comeback win 31-27. Three games on the NFL slate tonight. Bills at Jaguars kickoff at 1 p.m. Westwood One's coverage for that game gets underway right here on WEEI starting at 12:30. The 49ers are on the road in Philly. That one kicks off on Fox starting at 4:30. A busy day at TD Garden on Saturday. Bruins beat down the Rangers 10-2. Husnadinov had 4 goals. Zaka had 3, giving the Bruins their first double hat trick since 1964. David Pastrnak had 6 assists. Celtics weren't able to hold off Wembanyama and the Spurs. San Antonio beat down Boston 195. Bees back in action today at the Garden today at 5 o'clock against the Penguins. C's back in action tomorrow night in Indiana. Tip-off set for 7:30. I'm Tom Carroll. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
.com.
Back here on WEEI, John Lyons alongside Justin Turpin and Tom Carroll. And guys, for the first time since 2021... the Patriots are in the playoffs. And for the first time since January of 2020, the Patriots have a home playoff game. Love to see it. I want to take a few minutes here, though, and look at how we got here. And 617-779-7937, if you have any thoughts on the Patriots game today. You want to go back to the Alex Bregman thing as well. I'm open to. We do have a bunch of texts coming in about that as well. But this is a Patriots team. You go back to a year ago at this time. They had won 4 games. They fired Gerard Mayo. This time last year, they're in the process of hiring Mike Vrabel. They still don't have Josh McDaniels or Will Campbell or Steph Diggs or Milton Williams or Carlton Davis or any of these guys I keep listing. Robert Spillane. I think to go from where they were, and last year it was 4 wins, but it was really like 2.5 wins. And I say 2.5 because the Bills tanked the last game of the year. And then the game that the Patriots beat the Bears, I mean, the Bears fired their offensive coordinator the day after that game and fired their head coach like 2 weeks later. They didn't care, and they were terrible. So to go from that to where they were, I mean, just if you take a step back and look, it's just, it's pretty amazing turnaround to me.
And even just taking it face value, if we're looking at they had 4 wins last year, the 10-win turnarounds tied for the best in NFL history with the 1999 Colts and the 2008 Dolphins. Like, schedule or not, I know it's been such a hot topic. Like, to win 14 games is hard to do, no matter who you
and
play.
Look, the schedule is easy.
Right.
However, last year, they had a lot of easy games that they lost. Like, they lost to Tennessee last year. They lost to the Colts and Anthony Richardson last year. Like,
when they outgained them and had
What was it? A 19-play drive at the end of the game the Colts
brutal.
Had, plus a 2-point conversion
Richardson.
To win. Yeah. And then there was the Jacksonville game with the 18 straight runs, right? They had an easier schedule last year and still lost a bunch of those games. So this year, they won those games. And then when they played good teams, like they beat Buffalo on Sunday Night Football. Carolina, I know you can say whether how good they were or weren't. It was a playoff team that they beat. And Baltimore, I know, missed the playoffs. But to go there on a night game on Sunday night and to win there, like that's still a good win. So, yes, they had an easy schedule. But as we've seen before, guys, they've had easy schedules, and they've lost a bunch of those games.
And it, not to oversimplify it, it just speaks to how good this quarterback is and the leap that he took from year one to year two. And I know we saw flashes during the rookie season, but he's playing at an MVP level. And
he should win it.
He should win it. He probably won't.
I agree.
Saw a preview of that yesterday with Stafford getting first team all pro, Drake May getting second team all pro.
Wasn't Lamar first team all pro?
That was the first
year?
Time, though.
That
was the
first time
last year.
That's true.
Yeah.
But, right. John brings up a good point. It was kind of like the first time that happened. So I think we got a preview of it. Who knows? He should still win it, but that's my gut. Especially because I'm pretty sure the same voting body that votes on All-Pro also votes on MVP.
At least I know there's a lot of overlap. I don't know if it's all exactly the same people, but there's a lot of overlap.
Not to divert to MVP conversation here, but do you think there would be a way that they could have both Vrabel win Coach of the Year and May win MVP, or do you think it's one or the other?
So I think it's one of the other. And
we
look at when it's both have happened, like the Patriots in 2007, Belichick and Brady both won it, but they went 16-0.
Right.
And 2003, Belichick won Coach of the Year. Brady didn't get MVP. And I think 2010, they both won it. And that was a team that won 14-2, but they were also the one seed. Brady kind of outshined everyone else at that point. So I actually think May is more likely to win MVP than Vrabel is Coach of the Year. And I think Vrabel, and we can get into this too, he deserves a massive amount of credit. I just look around the NFL, like I think Liam Cohen did what Vrabel did, but it's his first year ever coaching as a head coach. Kyle Shanahan went 5-3 with Mac Jones and made the playoffs. And was almost, so not that Vrabel's not deserving. I just think May's path to MVP is a little more straightforward than, say, Vrabel's Coach of the Year.
I just think there's so many good NFL Coach of the Year candidates. Whereas
Ben Johnson, who we didn't even mention last night. Yeah,
Ben Johnson's the other one. Whereas May and Stafford are kind of head and shoulders, the two for MVP. And I just think, and I know we'll get into it more, I think what May put together this year, given what the Patriots looked like last year, given what he looked like last year, to have the team in the position that they're in, it's all on his back. I mean, it's not all, but a lot of it is. Whereas I think you could stick, I don't know, pick your quarterback into that Rams system, and they're probably still the 5 seed. In the NFC, right?
They might be high. Well, it's tough because that division's so good.
And I'm talking just like any Joe Schmo quarterback. Put him
Jimmy
in there.
Garoppolo.
Just their backup. Yeah.
I think they probably are in the playoff mix still.
And I think the biggest thing about May this year, and his numbers, 4,394 yards, 31 touchdowns, 8 picks, 72% completion percentage, number one in the NFL. Also had 450 rush yards and 4 rushing touchdowns. But there's two things about May that I found really interesting. First of all, 38 of his rushes went for first downs, which shows, I think, the intelligence and growth in his game that he's running at smart times to run. But the biggest thing to me, guys, and I talked about this in March, in April, in August, you guys have heard me say this 1,000 times, he limited his turnovers this year. I mean, last year, May, he had 12 starts, but one of them was that Buffalo game. He got pulled, so he essentially played 11 games, and he had 16 turnovers in those 11 games. This year, in 17 games, he had 10. And that has been the biggest difference. And you look at the games they've lost, two of those losses, Drake May had a bad interception in week one after halftime, which swung that game, and the turnovers against Pittsburgh. And I'm not saying that to downgrade him. I'm saying when he hasn't turned the ball over, they've won almost every game. Like, that to me has been the biggest difference and the biggest growth of him. And I think McDaniels deserves credit for that, sure. The other guys around him on offense deserve credit for that. But so much credit goes to May for when we look at the guy at the end of last year, 12 months ago, we're thinking, hey, this guy's promise. He could be good. We might have the guy here. And now we're sitting here talking about a guy that took a huge jump forward and could win the MVP.
Even as recent as training camp, like how many times did we come out of that day? And I just remember reading the headlines, like up and down day for Drake May, like inconsistent. In OTAs, what was it that Christian Gonzalez picked it off like twice? And people were like, we got to watch these turnovers. Yeah, 4 picks or whatever it was.
Yeah, that was a great news cycle.
that just goes to show how like pointless the counting stats is in training
especially
camp.
Especially in unpadded.
But we need the content.
I mean, against when they would.
Yeah, tell the website guy.
Yeah,
we need the content.
Well, I will say, when they did the joint practice against the Commanders and Pop Douglas just, like, tore him apart, I was like, he's going to get 1,000 yards this year. He might get 100 catches.
Can I say something on that? So the last 2 years, they had joint practices at home twice. 2 years ago, or last year, against the Eagles, I was there, And I remember thinking, wow, this is JV versus varsity.
Yeah, I think I said to you that day, I was like, this team is going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I sat there and I was like, okay, one team could win the Super Bowl. The other one team might get the number one pick.
Remember
like
how good Saquon looked?
And even, like, I remember watching Bryce Huff, who didn't even play that much for the Eagles last year, just dominate the Patriots.
Yeah, that team
practice.
Was loaded,
I'm like,
man.
Damn. And Mekhi Becton just shoving guys around. And now, this year, you have that joint practice you talked
about. They were better.
And I looked at them like, oh, wow, they're on to something here.
They're the, like, better team.
I think significantly better.
I thought so,
too. And that was a time, let's not forget, I know Washington had a bad year this year. That's when they were healthy.
Right.
Like, that was Jaden Daniels. Like, that was a fully – I think – I don't know if Terry McLaurin, I don't think he was out there that day.
He was very limited.
But the rest of their receivers were out there and go – like, that was them healthy. And that, to me, was the sign – that was the first time I felt, oh, wow. They were, like, I knew they would be better this year. But that joint practice was the first time that I was like, oh, wow, they're on to something here.
Yeah, and just another quick thought on the schedule as well, where we're talking about just, like, the season that they had. How many first place teams have had, or how many last place teams have had, like, have, how many teams have played a last place schedule and not made the most of it, right? Like, yeah. This is not something
it's a
like
great point.
The Patriots actually cashed in. They won 14 games. Like, how many teams play last place schedules and come out and win 8 or 9 games? And, like, that's still a hell of an improvement. You double your win total. If you win 4, you win 8 or 9. Anyone would have signed up for that this year. But to win 14, that says a lot.
Yeah, and like every year in the NFL, teams go from last to first, right? Whatever that stat is, like since 1990,
like every year there's at least one.
There's been 4 teams that have missed the playoffs that then make it the next year, which is a crazy stat and speaks to the NFL just having the perfect draft system, in my opinion. But yeah, like you said, Terp, you have those teams that are always kind of picking in the top 10, and they play last place schedules all the time,
and
right?
They don't make the most of it.
They don't. So the Patriots do deserve credit for that. Yes, their schedule was easy, but they handled it in a way that shows that they are heading in the right direction. This isn't just a flash in the pan. They weren't just 14 wins good because they had a really easy schedule. They actually are building something here.
And even go back to like last year, they lose a game to the Titans where May probably played his worst game as a pro, and this year they beat the crap out of the Titans. And it's like all those games last year, like, they lost a one-possession game to the Rams last year. This year, they win a one-possession game against the Bills and the Ravens. Like, all those games. And, like, the 978 texter makes a point. Like, how many of those turnovers last year were because the team was awful and he had to try to play hero ball? I think some of that's true, and I think some of it was him just not playing well. Like, that late interception against the Rams and the one against the Titans, he was forcing it. But, yeah, was a couple of those strip sacks, including the one against Houston because his offensive line was horrible? Like, yeah, some of that's true, too. Like, he has gotten better, but everyone around him has gotten better, and I think that's been a big part of their elevation.
And I think the most important part about this is that when you're looking at what fueled this, it's the two cornerstones. It's Drake May and Mike Vrabel.
Yeah.
And you presume that Drake May is only going to get better. He's only 23. He's in his second season, and he's gotten steadily better each and every week, it feels. And with Mike Vrabel, it's like he's just getting the most out of this roster. So it's your cornerstones, the guys that are going to be here for the future that have laid this foundation, and there's no reason to not believe it's sustainable on both accounts.
Yeah, and I think when you project, like, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but when you project forward, because there's so many young guys contributing, I think it does make you feel good about the next few years coming and the fact that so many of these guys, they just drafted. So hopefully maybe their drafting is, like, Travion Henderson has had real impacts this year. Like, we don't talk about Craig Woodson, but he started every game at free safety. Like, that's a big deal. Like, for him to do that as a rookie. And Will Campbell, remember this time last year, like, everyone's like, oh my God, he has arms like a T-Rex. Like, he was pretty good this year overall.
More than pretty good.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, again, all these young guys contributing, I think that makes you feel good about the future going forward.
And with Will Campbell, too, it's like, you don't really talk about the tackles a ton. You know what I mean? Yeah. Obviously, he's been under a microscope because he was, you know, fourth pick overall. Like, people have been looking at him, but, like, It really showed how important he's been when he was out. And everyone's like, oh, they're really going to miss Will Campbell. And same thing with Jarrett Wilson. That's another guy they drafted this year who's been a starter for them, and he's been very good.
And I think when you're not talking about a tackle or a safety, that's a good thing, right? That's rookies playing well and doing what they need to do to not be noticed. And like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, when a tackle is a standout tackle, you're never talking about the tackle.
Right. Yeah, the most we might have talked about Jared Wilson and Will Campbell was that game Myles Garrett had the 5 sacks. Like, right, really, but other than that, and I think, Tom, that's a good point. In a way, you don't want to be talking about those guys because it means they've been playing really well. 617-779-7937. Got a bunch of texts rolling in. Let's go to the phones. Rich in Milford wants to talk Patriots. Rich, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What do you got?
Yeah, so I want to talk about the strength of schedule. You know, everybody says it's historically bad. Well, the Patriots played the Ravens, the Falcons, the Bucks, and the Panthers. They were all 8-9 teams, and the Dolphins were 7-10, right? If the Patriots lose those games, they're all winning record teams. Are we now respecting the Patriots' strength of schedule more? Are we respecting the Patriots' season more if they lose those games than if they won those games?
Thanks for the call, Rich. It's an interesting point in that I think you look at, like, when they played Carolina, Carolina was bad, but then Carolina recovered and made the playoffs. So do we look at that differently? Atlanta, when the Patriots played Atlanta, they had one of the best pass defenses in the league. They were a good team. Remember, they blew out the Bills the next week, but then they fell off. So do we look at that? And even the Ravens, they came into the year as one of the Super Bowl favorites. You go down there when the Ravens were still fighting for a playoff spot, win on Sunday night. I maintain that was a great win.
Yeah, it was a comeback win, too.
Yeah, 11 points
they
down.
They didn't have to show that.
Yeah, and so I think, yes, is the schedule easy? Sure. But when they were tested, they won those games, and that's the important part. And I also think if you win tonight, is anybody going to be talking about, like,
no.
the stat that came out about they had the easiest schedule since the 99 Rams. You know when I found out that the 99 Rams had an easy schedule? About 2 weeks ago when that stat came
out. What about the 72 Dolphins?
I found out about that like 2 weeks ago.
Everyone's like, oh, they're the most dominant team. Oh, the 72 Dolphins are popping champagne bottles. No undefeated teams this year. I didn't know they had one of the easiest schedules.
You know what we remember about those two teams?
They won the Super Bowl.
They won the Super Bowl.
Even the 0-1 Patriots. Like, they had some easy games on that schedule. They had a better division, but they had some. They won the Super Bowl.
So to Rich's point about, well, if this 7-9 team beats you and blah, 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 it's like, this is why looking at schedules based on teams' records is kind of useless to me. I think that you need to have some nuance when you're looking at a team's schedule. Exactly how you were putting it, John. Like, when you played the Ravens, within context, that was a really difficult game.
Because you look at it now, like, oh, they missed the playoffs and fired their coach. But at the time, like, they were fighting for a playoff spot, and they were really good.
The larger picture doesn't matter on that particular Sunday. They still need to win that game within the context of that moment against what's going on that other sideline at that time.
I'm also not too sure this whole conversation disappears if they win this game tonight. It's going to revert back to, oh, it's Justin Herbert. He's terrible in the postseason. Oh, it's the Chargers. It's Jim Harbaugh. They falter off in the postseason. I feel like that'll be the perception after this. Like, this is something that's just going to follow them, and I think that's just the unfortunate reality because, like, what? Say they play Houston next, right? Say it is Houston.
I think that's a big boy win.
I think that's a big boy win, but is locally and nationally, like, the perception around C.J. Stroud and the Texans, like, it's the defense, right? Are people going to really give them the respect they deserve? I just feel like this narrative is going to follow them until they beat, like, a Buffalo in the championship game or whatever it is.
We're going to get into a deeper preview of this game at 10 o'clock, but coming up next, I want to continue that conversation because what is the attitude around this team if they win tonight? What is the attitude if they lose? All that coming up right here on WEEI.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
One last snap and it is over. What a season for the Denver Broncos. They are the number one seed in the AFC.
14-3 and the 2 seed in a home playoff game coming up next week. It'll be the first playoff game in Foxborough in 6 years. 38-10, the final score. Drake May finishing touches on his MVP case. A perfect second half.
Life is always easy. We did the best we could.
That was how the season ended for the Chargers and the Patriots. I'm John Lyons alongside Justin Turpin and Tom Carroll. Jackson is producing for us. And we're going to get into our deeper game preview at 10 o'clock. But before we get there, guys, Terp, you kind of started this last segment. Patriots win tonight. Do people kind of wash away the, hey, easy schedule, they're on the come up but not there yet thing? Or is this something that's going to take multiple playoff wins for people to get over?
They should, but will they? I don't think so.
For those of us that work at sports radio, they won't.
Yes, yeah. I think they should. If you win a playoff game, that should be it. Like, all right, you won a playoff game. You beat a playoff team. That should count. But I think people will revert to it's Justin Herbert, especially if he plays poorly. Like, if Justin Herbert comes out and struggles again, which he hasn't been good in the postseason, I just think people are going to fall back on that, fall back on the Chargers being a team that typically bows out early in the postseason. I think that'll be the narrative. But I guess it depends on how Justin Herbert plays. But no matter what, if they win this playoff game and they are playing on divisional weekend, I don't want to hear any more about it.
You're going to, though. Like, you're 100% right. That's going to continue to permeate until they, like, win the Super Bowl.
But what if they do win in a game that Justin Herbert plays well? Say this is a shootout, and the Patriots just win in a high-scoring game, and Drake May outduels Justin Herbert. Then what's the conversation?
Yeah. Or,
I think that would be it. It's going to fall back on Herbert.
I think smart fans would, but, like, let's just level set and talk about what this is. Like, online conversation and sports talk callers and texters, like, they're always looking for that red meat.
Keeps
like,
us up on
yeah,
here, so.
Like it's yeah, just
keeps me literally employed.
Yeah, right.
So I, you know,
like
on
the conversation's going to continue. Yeah.
And it's interesting because I think Terp, like, if they go out and they beat the crap out of the Chargers, which I don't think is going to happen, but I think people might look at it and say, Herbert had the broken hand, both of their offensive tackles are out, they fail in the playoff. Like, if they go out and they win this game 27-24 and their defense makes a key play late or May leads a game-winning drive late, then maybe the conversation shifts. For me, if they win this game, I think it washes away any talk of the easy schedule. But
agreed.
I think, Tom, to your point, it's probably going to take multiple playoff wins before the public at large. And I'm saying also the national conversation, because I think this has crept into the May MVP and the Vrabel Coach of the Year conversation is, oh, Vrabel can't be coach of the year because they beat the Browns and the Titans and the Jets and the Dolphins. Like, that's unfair. I think nationally it's going to take two wins for people to get by that.
And on that, a 14-win team has to have some sort, especially with the way that these two have performed, Drake May and Mike Vrabel, they have to have some sort of representation. One of them has to get it. And I think it'll be one or the other. I think when the voters come down and look, you're not going to get both. And I know, John, you said it's more likely Drake May gets it. I think it's the other way.
I agree.
Think it's Vrabel.
I agree with Terp.
Because I think just there's too much, and maybe this is fueled from the outside, and we don't really know. There's only, 50 voters, so we don't really know what's in their mind, and it's probably not coming out from them. But there was so much smoke about this Lifetime Achievement Award for Stafford, where it feels like that is what's going to happen. And if Stafford's the MVP, then Mike Vrabel better be the coach of the year because there has to be some sort of representation.
And I want to get to the Chargers point in a second, but to your point on the MVP stuff, Terp, I think May should win it, but 46 touchdowns to 8 picks, like, if you're just going to be a counting stats guy, that is crazy.
And I think,
this is something that we've talked about before, like, what's the line of demarcation on, like, once Stafford reached 45 touchdowns, is that the point where voters are like,
right,
we're like, just seriously, how many quarterbacks have
thrown? If he gets one more, I think I'm going to give it to him.
Like, how many quarterbacks have thrown for 45 touchdowns and not won the MVP? Like, it's what's the line of demarcation? Because I think a lot of the numbers favor May, whether it's completion
percentage,
EPA.
I put it on WEI.com last night. I'll pull it up right now.
Yeah, like completion percentage, EPA, all those things, like rushing yards, rushing touchdowns. They had the same number of interceptions, too. Like, a lot of those numbers favor May, and I think the supporting cast argument does too, but it's just that 46 number, I think, jumps out at people.
So May, this is what I wrote on WEEI yesterday. May is in the midst of a potential MVP season, leading the NFL in completion percentage, yards per completion, QBR, and passer rating. He's third in touchdown passes, fourth in passing yards, and passing yards per game, and fifth in completions.
Yeah, so a lot of those numbers, again, favor May, and I think you look at the point in their careers, the supporting cast, that should favor May as well. And I think it just comes down to, like, if they lose this game, I'm disappointed, but I don't look at the season as a failure because of where they came from and the room they have to grow.
100%. You can't look at this as a failure.
See,
this season.
I disagree. I think that this team has put itself in a position now where you need to take advantage of the window that is open. You won 14 games. You put yourself in that conversation. If you want to be considered a team that is actually good and not a product of a bad schedule, you can't then go and say, well, look where we came from and we lost in the first round. Ah, shucks. But hey, we're headed in the right direction. It's like, no, like now is the time. Like the way the NFL works, Dan Marino in his second season went to the Super Bowl and everyone said, oh, he'll be back. That never happened again.
Look at Joe Burrow right now. He's in the midst
of it. That's the modern day example of it with Marino. And it goes on and on and on. There's a million examples of this. Donovan McNabb, early-ish in his career, finally gets over the hump, doesn't get the ring in 04. I get, like, we could spend the rest of the show talking about guys that lost in Super Bowls that never get back. So if they don't take advantage of this window and make a playoff run, at least the AFC Championship, I personally believe it is a disappointment. They've changed the expectations, and now they have to live up to that.
Disappointment, yes. And I think that, like you said, because of the opportunity ahead of them. Like, there's no guarantee that you're going to go on this, you're going to win 14 games again.
They could win 8 games next year.
And the AFC is wide open. And that's been the conversation all year. It's wide open. You ought to cash in on this. But for a team in the first year, call it what it is. Like, people want to say it's the fifth year, sixth year of the rebuild, whatever they want to call it. We'll call it the first year of the Vrabel and May pairing. For them to win 14 games and win the AFC East, that's laying the groundwork for future success. And that's kind of establishing your identity and establishing what you want to be. Their goal was to win the division and host a playoff game. That's exactly what they're at right now. They're ahead of schedule. In a way, they're playing with house money. And I don't really like that term because, yeah, you have played your way into higher expectations. But for the success in, like, the foundation that they've laid in year one and winning the division. This was supposed to be Josh Allen's division for years to come.
Yep.
And in the first year with Vrabel May, they win the division. I don't know how you can possibly look at that as a failure.
We're going to get into more of that and start previewing this game itself. Don't worry, guys. We're only, 11 hours away from this game? Not 9 and a half, whatever. 10 hours. We're getting there. We are going to get into that. We are going to have more Alex Bregman talk, sneak in a segment on the Celtics last night, but a lot of Patriots today. Again, we're going to start diving into the game itself tonight, coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.